Hello, and welcome back to Frontier of Infinity. Some of you may have noticed that I've been gone for a while, and that's because a confluence of factors made it so that I couldn't produce episodes for a while. I sincerely apologize for the absence, and I'm hoping that I'll be able to keep the upload schedule regular from here on out. But that being said, I am going to have to make a modification to that schedule. For a while, at least, I'm only going to be uploading one episode every 2 weeks. I hope that we'll eventually be able to return to the episode per week model, but for a little while, it's going to have to be this way. I thank all of you for your patience. Now let's get on to the episode. This is the second episode of the Space Battle series, wherein we compare and contrast two historical spacecraft. In this episode, we're covering the two second-generation crewed spacecrafts from the United States and the Soviet Union, Gemini and Vossehod. These two programs took opposite routes to fruition. While Gemini was a long, methodical process that began before the first American crewed spacecraft had flown and sought to achieve specific goals which would allow NASA to build the skills and capabilities necessary to carry out a moon program, Vossehod was a rushed response to that program that was mainly undertaken to keep ahead of the Americans in the space race, though it also expanded Soviet capabilities. I'm not going to go into exhaustive detail regarding the origin and development of these programs, as we've already covered that in Gemini Rising and Vossehod. Rather, we're going to focus mainly on the two spacecraft themselves. We'll start with the launch vehicles. On the Soviet side, the Vossehod rocket was an offshoot of the tried-and-true R-7 Semyorka, the Soviet workhorse. It was outfitted with a slightly larger second stage to better accommodate the heavier Vossehod capsule, but was otherwise the same rocket that had carried the Vostok capsules. The launch vehicle for the Gemini capsule, however, was completely different from the two separate rockets that had served the Mercury program. The Atlas and Redstones that had served Mercury would not be sufficient for Gemini, given a change in the design of the capsule's escape system. Replacing the Mercury capsule's escape tower with ejection seats would save a lot of weight, but the old Atlas rocket, which had hefted the later Mercury flights, would not be a tenable option given that alteration. The issue was the fuel the Atlas used. The kerosene fuel it carried would explode violently in the case of a catastrophic failure, too quickly for an ejection seat to launch an astronaut away to a survivable distance. As such, a new launch vehicle needed to be found, and NASA eventually settled on the Titan II, which was being developed by the Martin Company for the Air Force. This rocket was being designed to serve as an intercontinental ballistic missile, and it was quite different from the Atlas. To start, it made use of hypergolic fuels, which were storable at room temperature and would ignite on contact. The Titan fired in two stages, the first powered by an Aerojet LR-87 engine, and the second with an LR-91. Together, these two stages were capable of lifting roughly 1,900 kilograms, or 4,200 pounds. Both of these rockets were perfectly functional and would perform as expected, but the capsules were where the crucial differences laid. The Vossehod, as we've previously covered, was really just a modified version of the Vostok capsule. Rather than the single seat that the old Vostok carried, the Vossehod was capable of carrying three cosmonauts at once, though this came at a steep price. The three seats crammed inside the tight interior meant that three cosmonauts could only fly without spacesuits, greatly increasing the danger of the flight. This three-seat design not only meant that the Voss-Hod was very uncomfortable and quite dangerous to fly, it also meant that the old ejection seat system was no longer viable. Three ejection seats couldn't fit, and even if they could, there was no way that three cosmonauts could launch out of the spacecraft's hatch at once. This meant that there was no way to escape the capsule in the case of a catastrophic failure, pushing up the risk of a Voss-Hod flight all the more. The removal of the ejection seats additionally required the landing system to be altered. Whereas the pilot of a Vostok would eject and parachute to the ground while a separate parachute would bring the capsule down, a new system of chutes and an additional system of retro rockets were installed on the Voss-Hod to reduce the speed of descent to a survivable rate before it slammed into the Earth. Gemini, on the other hand, had started out as a modification of the Mercury spacecraft, but eventually evolved into a major redesign so that the new spacecraft was only superficially similar to its predecessor. To start, the Gemini was much larger, about twice the size of the Mercury, weighing in at over 3,000 kilograms or 7,000 pounds, and stretching to 228.6 centimeters tall, or about 18.5 feet. It was lighter and slightly smaller overall than the Voss-Hod, but it was much closer in size to the Voss-Hod than Mercury had been to the Vostok. One of the major reasons why the Gemini was so much larger than the Mercury was because it was capable of carrying double the crew, two astronauts as opposed to the Mercury's one. This was important for NASA, as it would allow them to test their capabilities to support multi-crew flights and allow the astronauts to gain experience operating a spacecraft as part of a team. Each astronaut would enter the capsule through an independent hatch positioned over their seats, and each one would have their own porthole out of which they could see in front of them. These independent hatches were particularly convenient for extravehicular activity, or EVA, a fancy term for leaving the spacecraft to perform work or maneuvers in a spacesuit. On the Gemini, the cabin could be depressurized, and then one or both of the astronauts could simply pop their hatch and exit the spacecraft. The Gemini also had greatly expanded maneuvering capabilities over the Mercury or the Vostok, with a new system abbreviated OMS for Orbit, Attitude, and Maneuvering System. It used many small jets arranged around the spacecraft to alter its orbital path and provide fine control over the spacecraft's behavior in space. This was largely intended to allow for an orbital rendezvous and then orbital docking, two skills which would be vital for the upcoming Apollo program. The Gemini needed to be able to carry larger quantities of its consumable supplies as well. Fuel, electricity, drinking water, etc. This was due to the expanded crew, as well as to the planned length of the missions it would fly, much longer than those flown by Mercury. These supplies, as well as many of the other vital systems, were stored in an instrument module positioned below the crew capsule. This allowed for these vital components to be organized much more efficiently, and would make these components easier to access and thus to alter, maintain, and service. When the crew were ready to re-enter the atmosphere, the instrument module would be jettisoned, and only the crew module would come down. The re-entry and landing method was mostly the same for Mercury. The truncated cone shape of the capsule would allow it to endure the high temperatures and pressures of re-entry, and then parachutes would slow it sufficiently before it splashed down into the ocean. Though, unlike Mercury, which would bob about on the surface with its nose pointed upwards, the Gemini would float horizontally on the water so that the crew inside would be oriented properly, with their heads up and feet down. There was one more crucial component of the Gemini program, however, and that was the so-called Gemini Agena, a specially designed, uncrewed spacecraft that was intended to be used as a rendezvous and docking target for the Gemini capsule. The Agena was an adaptation of the Agena D upper stage rocket, which had been originally designed by the Lockheed Company. Powered by a Bell Model 8247 rocket engine, it was outfitted with a docking adapter designed by McDonnell Aircraft. This nearly 8-meter-long spacecraft was to be launched prior to the crewed component of a Gemini mission by an Atlas Agena rocket, so that it would be waiting in orbit when the Gemini capsule was launched. The crew of the capsule could then practice locating, catching, and approaching another spacecraft, eventually even docking to combine the two spacecraft into one. Again, this would be a critical capability for NASA to develop before Project Apollo, as a docking maneuver in orbit would be necessary for the planned moon landing. When comparing the Gemini and the Vosshod directly, I think the choice is pretty clear regarding which is the superior spacecraft and program overall. Vosshod was a rattletrap spacecraft thrown together as quickly as possible to win prestige points for the Soviets over the United States, while Gemini was a massive leap forward in spacecraft design. Though it was slightly smaller, the Gemini had nearly every advantage over the Vosshod. It was more maneuverable, more convenient to operate, and much safer to fly. While both vehicles were capable of allowing their crews to carry out EVA, the Gemini solution was much more elegant than the one that had been thrown together for Vosshod. Depressurizing the cabin and opening the hatch meant that any Gemini could allow for an EVA, while the Vosshod had to mount a specially designed inflatable airlock to the outside of the capsule. This lock could be used to allow for an EVA, but it then had to be jettisoned for re-entry. The one advantage that the Vosshod had was perhaps its crew capacity. It could carry 3 cosmonauts, as opposed to Gemini's 2 astronauts, but even that was more of a detriment than an advantage. It meant that the vessel was far more difficult to operate, much less safe, and it prevented the crew from being able to carry out any sort of complex scientific work in space when there were 3 cosmonauts on board. The only advantage it provided was the ability of the USSR to claim that they could fly more cosmonauts at once than the US could. Despite their haphazard space vehicle, the Soviets nevertheless managed to beat the Americans to the punch with their new program. As we covered in previous episodes, they were able to launch a multi-crew mission first, and carry out an EVA first. In just 2 flights, the Soviets had achieved many firsts and expanded their lead in the space race, buying themselves some time by forcing the Americans to play catch-up while Kurilov and his team at OKB-1 could scramble to get their N-1 launch vehicle and Soyuz capsule ready for a moon landing. But Kurilov wasn't even able to devote all of his time to space exploration projects. He was still a major player in the development of military missiles, and that carried a much greater urgency in the minds of the Soviet leadership. Gemini would also prove to be a much more robust program, comprising 10 crewed flights as opposed to Vosshod's 2. And allowing NASA time to develop a wider range of skills than the Soviets gleaned from their meager Vosshod flights. As we move forward with the story, we'll continue to explore the ongoing Gemini program, as well as some of the unmanned missions that were flown by both the Americans and the Soviets. But until we return, I thank you all for listening, and I'll see you among the stars.